Ready for scripture to have some new meaning? Yes, the same words, new meaning. How about when it comes to us from space? From the side of the moon. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, the psychological, physical, and this time with the moon, 50 years later, after the moonwalk. This is episode 579 of The Next Step. I'm asking you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskin brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
50 years ago, can you believe it? 50 years ago, July 1969. We landed on the moon. We're going to be talking about the moon, what a special treat the moon is, and, of course, connecting the dots with our spirituality. But before we do that, I want to connect the dots with Earth. What's going on over here? Okay, so last week we were on with the podcast, and first time that this had ever happened in 12 years of podcasting, we had an earthquake during the podcast. And whoa, what an experience that was. Now, it was kind of interesting for me because I've been through so many earthquakes, having been born and raised here in California. I've felt my good fair share of them. But you kind of sort of never get used to them because of the surprise factor. And if you remember, we were talking about familiarity breeding contempt, about how we get used to certain things. And I made the connection last week as the earthquake happened, but I had some more time to really think about it. You know, we're so familiar with our surroundings and what happens that you just take it for granted. You know, you just don't take it seriously. And that's true whether it's an earthquake happening or whether it's one of the things that you do in life, the relationships that you have, or the relationships that we have with God. Familiarity breeds contempt. And sure enough, there we were. We're feeling this earthquake and we're still going through with it. Okay, I took a little break. Well, the following day, right after we got off the air, that was Thursday, that our last podcast. The following day, Friday, we had gone out to the desert. We were out there in Palm Springs area, and we were about to enjoy an incredible concert. Jethro Tull, 50th anniversary. We were looking forward to that for a while, and there we are. It started at 8 o'clock, and along with this rather large group of – well, let's just say that it wasn't a geriatric convention, but it had all the signs of being one. No, it wasn't that bad. But we're sitting there, and it was, I think, in their second song, around 8:15, 8:20. And things are just moving. And it was kind of interesting because the music was fantastic and there was just such a beat to it. And you're thinking, okay, is this the music? Is this people just rocking around? I mean, it really gave rock and roll a new meaning because we were rolling. All of a sudden, big earthquake hit. 7.1, they said. It was bigger than the one we had had the day before. And so there we are in these huge, huge speakers are moving around. They are right in front of us. I mean, not only in front of us, on top of us. The lights, everything was just, they were swinging. And the artist, of course, Ian Anderson up on stage, he was just rocking away. And I think he was gone out of the moment. He was enjoying it too much. He didn't notice it. And people around us were like pointing, whoa, everything is moving. Now, the first thing that I thought of is, you know, like I'm feeling this move and I'm seeing, I'm getting dizzy and I'm thinking, okay, something wrong with me? What's wrong? And then all of a sudden you realize you're in the middle of an earthquake. You start putting two and two together. Hey, this reminds me of when it happened last time. And you still don't get used to it. You still get those adrenaline rushes. And so there we were in the middle of the concert. But here's the thing. Now, they tell you during a major earthquake, you need to cover, you need to get out of the area. You shouldn't be sitting underneath these big things that could collapse on you. I mean, having been through the Bay Area earthquake 1989, we saw the Bay Bridge collapse and people stuck under there. I mean, these are all memories that we have. We lived through that. There we are in concert and it's shaking, it's moving. And your first thought is, okay, let's go for survival. But what is it? It's the familiarity that you know that after an earthquake, things settle down and you know that life goes on. And sure enough, it did. But it gets me to think, like, you know, why aren't we there? Why aren't we at the moment thinking, like, I'm not saying overreacting, but I'm saying let's take a little bit more care about these warning signs that are all around us. Whether it's an earthquake or it's the life situations that we have, we take so much for granted. The relationships that we have, whether they are with people, with God, our spirituality, with ourselves, don't take them for granted. Really, it's to me, the wake-up call of the earthquake is not preparedness for earthquakes. It's preparedness for life, just to not take things for granted, to enjoy the moment, enjoy the day, to keep those relationships that you have alive and well and real, you know, interacting. So I start off with that little exercise that we went through. And, well, we had an awful lot to talk about that night. And it was, like I said, it gave rock and roll a new dimension. We were really rocking and rolling. It was an incredible concert, too. After 50 years to see Ian Anderson up there and to realize that, you know, this is a band that we had connected with back 1972 was my first, 71 was my first introduction to it. So I got on board about 2 years after the band had started. And it takes you back. It's a moment of nostalgia, but it's also a time for reflection on just how much has happened and just, and really the thankfulness for this wonderful body of work, which really touches you. I mean, imagine for 50 years just touching you through adolescence, through young adulthood, through marriage, through priesthood, connecting with your life in so many ways. I feel very blessed, and it was a moment of nostalgia, but I think more it was a moment of reflection for me. And we just had an incredible time that evening, just being in the presence of such an incredible band and the body of music that we heard, and a little rock and roll that was good too. Hey, listen, there was another story I told you, and that's where the starting point of today's episode's going to be. I told you about a story about a friend that I had met after some 20 years. And just, I just touched on it last week, but I got to thinking a little bit more because certain things happened, okay? And I'm going to go through that with you and take you in that direction. So bear with me a little bit. I'm going to do a little storytelling. Sunday, I had a day of 23 hours. I woke up at 2:30 in the morning to catch a flight out of LAX. It was boarding at 5. I had to be there by 3:30. It was just too wild. 2:30, woke up in the morning to catch a flight to Seattle, went and did the Divine Liturgy, the Holy Badarak, celebrated with the people, and having to be Independence Weekend, there were just no flights to return until the last flight of the day. So the last flight I took back from Seattle at 9 o'clock and got to LAX at 11:30. By the time I made it home, it was around 1, get ready for bed, 1:30. I mean, it was just a little shy of 23 hours of being up. And I was beat. I was really, really beat and exhausted. It was very difficult. But it gives you time, you know. It's in those times of exhaustion that you start thinking and wondering about some of the things that ties your life together. And I want to share with you some stories. So I started last week. I told you I had a friend that I hadn't seen for about 20 years. And we met at some event or something, a church, I forgot what. And I was wearing a lapel pin that said 7 times 77. Now, interesting that I hit that last week, because last Sunday was the anniversary. Last Sunday was July 7th. In other words, 7-7. And we started this thing with the forgiveness formula, just remembering that Jesus said, you must forgive your enemies 7 times 77 times. And so in July 7th of 2007, when the numbers lined up 777, we had a big event on that day. We called it the Forgiveness Conference, and we invited people from throughout. We had people from Rwanda. We had local people. We had people from different denominations coming. It was a really blowout event that In His Shoes sponsored, and we used, All Saints Episcopal Church for that day here in Pasadena. It was a pretty intense event. And of course, the lectures, the talks, the conference was about forgiveness. And this last Sunday was July 7th, and it didn't dawn on me last week when I shared the story with you. But anyway, I was wearing this little lapel pin, and I ran into a friend that I hadn't seen for 20 years. And I remember this friend from childhood. And I remember that we were in youth group, the Armenian Church Youth Organization, ACYO, together. But we were in different churches, in other words, geographically here in Los Angeles area. At that time, we had 4 or 5 churches. The community was just growing. And I was at St. James, he was at St. Peter's, and we ran into each other after 20, 25 years. How are you doing? How's it going and everything? And then he looked at my lapel pin and he said, okay, I'll bite. Those were his words, I remember. Okay, I'll bite. What's 7 times 77? And, you know, I love this question. That's why I wear the lapel pin. That's why, hey, you know, people ask me, what's that on your arm? You know, if you've seen my videos, you notice that I have this little rubber bracelet. It's my 777 bracelet. It's a reminder that we need to forgive. And I love it when people ask me about it, because it gives me an opportunity to get on my soapbox and talk about the importance of forgiving, that we all make mistakes, and it's important for us to understand our humanity. Forgiveness allows that, and it helps us. It helps us move forward. So this guy looked at it, and he says, I'll bite. What is 7 times 77? Yeah, it's a lapel pin. You're wearing a suit, and there's this little pin that says 7 times 77. Now, this may not seem strange. However, I happen to know that this guy used to go to these Bible studies, these intense Bible studies. And they were noted for, you know, young people going to Bible study. And I was just kind of surprised that he would ask this, having been a student of, say, the Bible. So anyway, I went ahead and I said, you know, this is what we call the forgiveness formula. Jesus said, you must forgive not only 7 times, but 7 times 77 times. In other words, constant forgiveness. Okay. And he turned to me and he said, did Jesus really say that? Now, like I said, this may not seem strange to you. It did to me, because I imagined that somebody who had gone to so many Bible studies would have eventually ran across this, or at least been familiar with the concept of forgiveness. But he wasn't. And that's when things started to click for me. It was like a connection of many, many dots all of a sudden. And bear with me. I said, there's a few stories that are going to come out. And so I thought about it. During the 70s, these people that would go to Bible study, I think it's the same as many people who go to Bible study know. It's wanting affirmation that you are doing the right thing, that you are in the in-group and others are in the out-group. In other words, I am saved and you're not. And you may think that that's funny, they may think that that's odd, but there are so many people who come, especially to Christianity, with that idea of learning something, that why am I going to make it into heaven and you're not? And it's true, I think, even in Bible studies, as I do so many Bible studies throughout my life. We've at least had a once-a-week Bible study, and many times we've done, you know, several times. And, you know, you add to them the podcasts that we do, and we get people who ask questions. Probably one of the most annoying questions for me is like, well, I'm saved. Why? What about the other people? What's going to happen to the other people? What's going to happen to the Jews? How about the Muslims? What's going to happen to the Buddhists and the Hindus? Well, I'm saved already. It's annoying to me because it's not a question that you can answer. It's not a question that you should ask. I mean, everybody has their own set of beliefs. For me to say I'm a Christian and I go to heaven, well, guess what? My idea of Christianity is quite different than a lot of other Christians that I've met, people who claim to be Christians. As mine is different, they look at me and they say, hey, this guy's Christianity is different. It's very difficult to say, hey, this is the main line. Even Jesus came up with so much that he said, and yet we see the tremendous division within the Christian church, particularly within Protestantism. The number of Protestant denominations is astronomical. Why? Because people understand it in different ways. So it was just kind of an interesting little side note there that I realized that this is the reason why this guy had gone to Bible study. This is what people teach in Bible study. This is what they want to hear. So, that being said, Sunday night, I arrive at LAX. It's 11:30 at night. And now I have a 45-minute drive to get home. And what do I do? Whenever it's late night, I enjoy, there's a talk show. It's a coast-to-coast with George Norrie. You may have heard him, yeah. He's syndicated. He's on many, many channels, and he's as he is here in the Los Angeles area. And I like listening to him because, well, he's kind of like out there. It's the paranormal. It's extraterrestrial visitations. And, of course, he gets into these kind of so-called religious topics about end times and raptures and revelation. So I happened at 11:30 at night, exhausted, because at this point I've now been awake for 22 hours. I get in the car and I turn on my AM radio, the AM channel, and there he is, George Norrie, and he is interviewing somebody who is talking, let's see, what's his name, Bill Salus. He's got a website about the apocalypse, about Revelation. And so this guy's talking, and he rattles off a few things. And I'm just, like, listening. And I said, I wish I wasn't driving. I would love to just, like, record this. I would love to read about it. So anyway, I had enough, all right, don't tell anybody. But while I was driving, I wrote down this guy's name, okay? And the following day, I looked him up. And sure enough, what he had said was they're on his website. Okay. I want to just share it with you because this is very interesting and it's important. He talks, let me just read the introduction to Bill Salus's The Apocalypse Revelations. The world has been thrusted into chaos and uncertainty. Epic prophetic wars are happening in the Middle East. Millions of Christians just disappeared. Apparitions of the Virgin Mary have reappeared. Meanwhile, the Antichrist begins his charismatic career. The apocalypse has finally arrived. Wow. So here's a guy, despite what Jesus says, that that time nobody knows, only the Father in heaven. Here's a guy who, despite what Jesus says, do not concern yourself with these things, who's concerning himself with them, and he's doing it under the banner of Christianity. Okay. So I'm listening, and here's the wild part, okay? He's now going to talk about certain issues. And I want to just, this is right off of his website, okay? It was exactly the way he was talking. He says, prophetic topics are the destruction of Damascus, Isaiah 17, nuclear disasters in Iran, and prophecy of Elam, Jeremiah 49, 34 through 39, the Israeli Defense Forces in biblical prophecy, Obadiah 1 through 18, the final Arab-Israeli war, Psalm 83, the rapture of the church, 2 Thessalonians 4, 15 through 18, the coming greater, safer Israel, Ezekiel 38, 8 through 13. Okay. I don't mean to belabor the point, but he goes on, and he went on, and he's saying, okay, here's the scriptural basis for this. Listen, I can't get tired saying this. I need to say it. The Bible was never meant to be dissected like this. It was never meant to be read the way this guy does it. You can't take... It says something in Ezekiel, then St. Paul says it in Thessalonians, something else, and then in Jeremiah says something else. It's not meant to be like that. You can't just go pick up. That's like saying Noah's Ark landed on the mountains of Ararat, Genesis 8. The mountains of Ararat. Oh, wow. That's like taking that passage and read, and then finding something in Jeremiah where he talks about the flatness of a space, and then going to the New Testament and finding in Thessalonians where they talk about reality, and then taking away all the different ideas or taking them out of context and just saying that Ararat in reality is flat. Well, it's all in the Bible, all the three words, the four words, they're in the Bible. But that's not what the Bible says, right? So what if it did say it? It's not right. It's not right. Trust me, the Bible is not talking about the Iranian nuclear deal. It is not talking about Trump. They're not in there. It was farthest thing from the people who wrote it. They would never imagine. In fact, we can't even imagine that there's a Trump, okay? I mean, let alone 3,000 years ago, prophets were thinking about a Trump. So what I'm saying is that, you know, we talk big, and especially Christians are so concerned about coming times that they forget about the reality we live in right now. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. What are the stories that we hear? And those stories, how do you interpret them? There are people who take these literally. For instance, they talk about Adam and Eve being a man and a woman. They take it literally about the creation story, that it was exactly a 24-hour day, and six 24-hour days were necessary to give us all of creation. And failing to understand that there was no measurement of time until there was a sun, and failing to realize that time is relative anyway, and failing to realize that, hey, we are living in the 21st century and we think of things differently. These stories were written back, you know, in a way of explaining to people. Think about this, okay? What were they going to do? What do you think? If you sat with somebody 3,000 years ago and you talked about amino acids and you talked about cells splitting up, you talked about fusion, and you talked about how evolution is picking up bits and pieces, survival of the species, they just look at you, they tilt their head and go, whoa, you know, this guy's cracked. It was the best way to describe it to a people who lived back then. Does that mean that it's not true? No, it doesn't. It just means that the description is not a literal description, nor was it ever intended to be a literal description. For me, God created the heavens and earth. It works for me. I don't need to put it inside of a time constraint of 6 days. I don't need to call Adam and Eve out to explain humanity. I'm very comfortable saying that God created life. That's the truth of it, right? And instead of celebrating that truth, we want to just like build on something that isn't there. It's not there. And so when you hear people like this, especially in the middle of the night, especially on 22 hours of awakeness, you go, whoa, this is a little bit too much for me, but I had to share it with you because I'm going to play for you something. It's coming up in the second portion of today's show, and it has to do with the moon. I'm going to play for you a little clip of the Apollo 8 crew. And I'll give you the background of it. And when you hear it, you're going to understand what I mean, because you're going to hear scripture and it's going to have a different meaning. Let's take a break right now, okay? I'm going to put a pause in it because I do want to talk about some really serious stuff coming up right after the song. I'm going to share with you a song that I particularly care about. In 1969, the Apollo 11 spacecraft landed on the moon. I was with my dad that day. We had gone to the St. James Church picnic, and we didn't have a church at that time. We didn't have a place to do it. We were renting out Croatian Park. And my dad, God love him, I'm so happy he did this, because I was only 11 and wouldn't be able to do it by myself. No, I guess I was 13, excuse me. He said, let's slip out. And we slipped, and we left the picnic. We went to the local Safeway supermarket. And there on a counter was a television set, and we watched the moon landing there. I have vivid recollection of that day. We watched the moon landing. The Apollo project was the third major project of the space of the United States Space Administration, National Aeronautic and Space Administration, NASA. It was in a race against the Soviets, the then Soviet Union, to get the first man on the moon. There was the Mercury projects, the Gemini project, the twins, which had two people in the spacecraft. Apollo had the three-person spacecraft. And so they were sending up astronauts three at a time. Apollo 11 went up. There was the lunar module, the landing module, which came down and landed on the moon. Meanwhile, there was two of people on there. It was Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. They landed on the moon, Apollo 11. But there was another guy named Michael Collins, who's all but forgotten. He was the third astronaut on that Apollo mission. And his duty was to be vigilant. In other words, he didn't land on the moon, but he was in charge of moving the spacecraft around the moon. So he was charged with doing this. So now think about this. If he had not done this, basically those two people would have ended up being lost in space there on the moon. But thanks to Michael Collins, who kept the orbit of the moon going, when Neil and Buzz were finished, they were able to shoot up off of the moon and reconnect with Michael Collins, the third astronaut, and the three of them returned back to Earth. In 1970, Jethro Tull, Ian Anderson, wrote this song for Michael Collins, Jeffrey, and me.
watery eyes of the last sighing seconds, blue reflections mute and dim, beckon tearful child of wonder to repentance of the sin. And the blind and lusty lovers of the great eternal lie go on believing nothing, since something has to die. And the apes' curiosity, money, power wins, and the yellow soft mountains move under him. I'm with you, Lamb, though it's a shame that it had to be you. The mothership is just a blend from your trip made for two. I'm with you, boy, so please employ just a little extra care. It's on my mind. I'm left behind when I should have been there. Walking with you.
And the limb for his hungry viewers fight to fasten with their eyes, like the man hung from the trapeze, whose fall will satisfy and congratulate each other on their rare and wondrous deed. That their big grudged money bought to sow the monkey seed, and the yellow soft mountains grow very still, witness as intrusion the humanoid thrill.
I'm with you, Lamb, though it's a shame.
For Michael Collins, Jeffrey, and me. Jethro Tull performing 1970 on the Benefit album. One of the first songs that I ever heard. First album that I got. 1970, yeah. Talking about Michael Collins, the one that always gets forgotten, right? We talk about Neil and Buzz, but there was a Michael Collins who did the work of being vigilant, steadfast, keeping the ship going, orbiting the moon, so that when Neil and Buzz were ready to come back and get back to Earth, they'd have a means of getting back to the Earth. The unsung hero, Michael Collins. Hope you enjoyed that. I love that song. Very, very pretty. It touches a unique spot for me in my soul, because it takes me back, too. It takes me back. So we are remembering the first time a human being, stepped on another celestial object. 50 years ago, 1969, in the grand scheme of things, not very long ago. But for those of us who remember that day, it was a very, very special one And it got us to dream, it got us to believe in good things. Sometimes you think maybe that's what we need a little bit more of, right? To think about a little bit more about the good things that are really truly out there. Anyway, just wanted to share that with you. Our song of the day, it's a little feature that we do every podcast. We'll have a link on today's show notes to the song, to the artist, and we always encourage people to if you like it, you know, support these artists, incredible people that bring so much life and beauty to our life.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. Yet all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
Yet I'm trying. Well, we are talking today about our faith in terms of taking it for granted. We're also talking about the way so many people have, for lack of a better word, manipulated the scriptures. No, not a lack of a better, that is the word that we're looking for. Manipulated the scriptures to get across their their story or their belief. And, you know, you've got to remember that the Bible, actually, it is the Bible, it's the book, right? Is one book. Yeah, it's been written at different times, to different circumstances, different people, different authors, and everyone brings their own contribution into this book. But essentially, the Bible itself is one book. And it is a book that talks about God's love for us from beginning of time to the end of time. That's how simple it is. And the way we honor that love is by having love and respect towards one another. And Jesus makes this pronouncement over and over and over again. Who are my brothers and my sisters? Those people who have gone out and helped the weary, the hungry, the lonely, the suffering. He talks about the idea that if you go to the altar of God and you remember that you have a grievance against one of your brothers, leave your gift at the altar and go and make amends with him and then return. Well, what's he saying? Leave God and go out and make sure that you're squared away here in this world. Because it doesn't make any sense to say, hey, I'm okay with God, but I can't stand humanity. I can't stand people. He makes this point over and over again. So yes, we are talking about some people who have taken these scriptures, who have manipulated it. But I want to talk a little bit more because you're going to hear, I'm going to play for you something at the end, right? Just coming up in a few minutes. Something that came to us from the lunar mission. It came from Apollo 8. And when you hear it, you're going to say, wow. Scripture is going to have a new meaning for you. So bear with me for a few more moments, okay? So we were talking about all of this, about how people have manipulated and taken it, and really the entire idea is for us to start understanding ourselves. Think about this. I mentioned a few moments ago that, you know, the stories of creation, these were ways of explaining things to people 3,000 years ago. Think about the whole idea of God. We think so many people, and yes, I know you're here on the next step. I'm hoping you're not at this point, but so many people think of God as this old man sitting around. In fact, just this morning, I was very annoyed this morning. I watched a clip of a former priest who was out there in, he was doing a pilgrimage and referred to Jesus as Jesus Heidig, Jesus' father. I don't know, it just kind of hit me the wrong way. Jesus talks about his heavenly father. He talks about love in terms of a human form. Why? Because it's easy for us to comprehend. Do you remember the story at the Transfiguration? He was radiating. People can't understand that. If you just see that light just radiating, how are you going to understand that? And so Jesus was bringing it into terms that we could understand. Your heavenly father who cares about you, a father who has compassion for you. And in making God the father, we also understand the importance of that human element about the way we need to be interacting with one another. So in a very real sense, the way Jesus presents God to us, these images that we have of God as this old man, comes to us because we've been taught that God is Father. And so it's just natural to think, okay, if he's been around for if he's been around for millennia, right, he must be an old guy. And then when science comes along and says the earth has been around for, or the universe has been around for 13 billion years, you say, okay, this guy really, really must be old. No, it's not about that. These are just ways for us to understand some of the attributes: a loving, a caring, and compassionate God, the manifestation of love in all of its forms. Very complex, but Jesus always had this knack for bringing it down to very the bare essentials. He did so through a tool that he used called the parables. So, in other words, we may not understand death and not understand how things just end and then continue, but then Jesus brings it down to a very simple form. He says, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains a single seed. He's, of course, alluding to his own death and his own resurrection and how the church is going to prosper. But he's also talking about death. That get with the program, folks. You need to die to produce your seeds. And so in dying, you have left this life. But what's important is what you've done in that life, which gets remembered. It becomes your legacy, and then others build off of it, on it. The grain of wheat must die, fall into the earth, die, for it to produce new wheat kernels, for it to produce a new life, a continuity, the continuation of life. And Jesus used these miracles just brilliantly, and why not? Yes, he's God. He needed to express the mysteries to us in ways that we would understand. I don't know if you've ever done this. Have you ever thought about what some of the parables that he might have today? I always think about this when I enter into large buildings. There is the thing about Jesus saying, the first shall be last, the last shall be first. And I always think about that when entering a tall building with its elevator. You get on at the top floor and you're going to go down. You're the first one on, right? And then you start collecting people all the way down. And when you get to the bottom floor, you were the first on, you're the last one off. Wow, there you go. There's a parable for you. It works, right? It gives you a visualization of what it means. The first shall be last. And the last guy who got on floor two, by the time he makes it to floor one, he's the last person who got on. He'll be the last one to get on, the first one to get off. Okay, I kind of got it. I understand. And that's the extent of my understanding, okay? Because I will take from it what I can comprehend. And Jesus gives us these parables because our minds can't comprehend the divine. It's God we're talking about. If you could explain God, he's no longer God. You can't explain God. It's beyond your thoughts, beyond your understanding. Okay. But what I can understand is relationships, that I need to get along in this world with the people all around me. I need to be able to create a life that is good, not only for myself, but for my children, for my grandchildren, for this planet. We can't be out there fighting and killing people. It doesn't make sense. God's commandment is that we love one another. And above that, Jesus says, love your enemies. Wow. Pray for those who persecute you. Why? Because, hey, if you don't do it, it's no different than the course we're on right now. And look where we're at. We're scared to death that this world's not going to survive. Every morning you wake up thinking, hey, what happened in the night before? Who put their foot in their mouth? Who said something odd? What's the newest message that we're getting? Yeah, because our only hope is that we extend our hands to one another. We start understanding one another. That was what was so beautiful about the moon flight. We were starting to understand that we are one people here on this planet. So Jesus uses these parables to understand, to explain the complex and to bring it down, to simplify them for us. In fact, let's see, what is this? Matthew 13, chapter 13, verse 10. He says, "The disciples came and asked Jesus, 'Why do you speak to them in parables?'" You know, it was a problem back then too. Like, why don't you just tell us? Why don't you just tell us who's going to heaven and who's not? And Jesus said, "To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For to those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But for those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing they do not perceive, and hearing they do not listen, nor do they understand." Now think about that, okay? You have ears. How often do you hear? You have eyes. How often do you see? The other day, somebody was, I was up in Seattle, the greenery, the lushness. Somebody was talking, where is the miracle today? I said, look around you. Look around at these beautiful trees shooting up to the sky. Is this not a miracle? That you cannot create one leaf, you cannot create one little cell of this tree in a test tube, that it just all came about. And look at the variety of trees, of green vegetation all around, and the birds and the animals, and whoa! How about just being quiet, pausing, and taking it all in, and just accept that it's beautiful. And Jesus was saying, look, people have eyes. They got eyeballs in the sockets, but they don't see. They got ears, but they're not listening. They're not hearing. So I'm telling them in terms of parables. That's what this is all about. That's how you start understanding to the levels that we can, okay? Look, I'm going to now tie in that big celestial object called the moon, okay? You're going to say, how are you going to do that? Where's the dot you're going to connect, okay? You ready for this? Turn to a story that takes place in one of the Gospels. Actually, I believe the same story. I'm not sure. I think this story appears in the three synoptic traditions. I'm going to read the Mark tradition from St. Mark. "When they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them, and some scribes arguing with them. When the whole crowd saw Jesus, they were immediately overcome with awe, and they ran forward to greet him. He asked them, 'What are you arguing about with them?' Someone from the crowd answered, 'Teacher, I brought you my son. He has a spirit that makes him unable to speak. And whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down. And he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they could not do so.' He answered them, 'You faithless generation, how much longer must I be among you? How much longer must I put up with you?'" Pretty cool, huh? "Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy. And he fell on the ground and rolled about, foamed at the mouth. Jesus asked the father, "How long has he been this way?" He said, "From childhood. It has often cast him into a fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you are able to do anything, have pity on us and help us." Jesus said to him, If you are able, all things can be done for the one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out, "I believe, help my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You spirit that keeps this boy from speaking and hearing, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." After crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out and the boy was like a corpse. So that most of them said, he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up, and he was able to stand. When he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast it out? He said to them, this kind can come out only through prayer and fasting. That's Mark chapter 9, verse 14 and following. You know where this parable is, or excuse me, where this story is used in the Armenian church tradition? There is a book I've shared with you many times about the prayer book called the Mashtots. The Mashtots, named after an early saint of the church. Not the Mesrop Mashtots necessarily. There was another Mashtots who had written many of the prayers. The book of Mashtots, and I think it was a few months ago when there was the Episcopal consecration, I shared with you that there was a Mashtots, the prayer books. There's a Mother Mashtots, which is reserved for the sacraments that a bishop can celebrate, and there's the Father Mashtots, which is reserved for the sacraments that a Catholicos can celebrate. So inside this Mashtots that the priest has, each priest has it and has been assigned to perform, to celebrate these prayer services, there is services that, you know, like the baptism, the wedding, the funeral, some specific ones. For instance, a second marriage. Yes, we do have that too. There are things that are probably a little bit outdated, but are still in there, and it reminds us of a time that we lived in. For instance, the blessing of a water well. Well, it was very important. People needed water, and the priest would come, and they'd bless the water well, and then take out the water from there. There's blessing of a woman who is in delivery, who is having a hard labor. Tejvaradzin, yes, a hard labor. Call in the priest. And don't laugh. I've been there. I've gone there. Yes, you call in the priest for that service. Now, there is another service, and it is called for the Aisahar. Aisahar means the demonically possessed, and the Lusnod, which literally means Lusin. See where I'm connecting? It means the moon. Mental illness had something to do with the cycles of the moon, with the attraction of the moon, with the gravity of the moon, with the influence of the moon over our lives. Why? Because, well, you know, the moon, their cycles, women's cycles, the 28 days, the periods that would go through, and there was an influence of that moon on our lives. And so they called those people who were demonically possessed Aisahar. And they had this word lusnod, directly the word lunatic translated, okay? And people, and this is what it was. In other words, there was a time where they couldn't be explained. And I've got to tell you, I've done this service twice in the 37 years as a priest. And it's a tremendous service when you do it with faith, when you do it with understanding, when you come to it with a naive heart. And both times, I'll share them with you one day. I'm not ready to do that right now. They are very emotional episodes in my life that I had to do. There was no other way of getting around it besides the exorcism. But my point here is that we didn't understand, and we put this in the domain of physical attractions. It's much like astronomy. Excuse me. No, astronomy. Please do not write me. I know the difference. It's much like astrology. Yes, I do know the difference. Astronomy, astrology. I meant it's much like astrology, where people say, well, the constellations, the pull of these planets, the pull of these different stars and their influence in our lives today. Same way there was an influence of the moon that people felt like, okay, we were controlled by the cycles. Okay, so that being said, this was the way people understood, and it was fine, you know. And like I said, these services are seldom performed today. In 37 years, I've had to do twice, and both times it was, obviously, it was at the request of the family. Yes, that was bad choice of words. What's going on right now? Yes, of course, it's at the request of the family. I do not go places and say, hey, you need an exorcism, man. Man, although I think that there are people that you want to do that. Just kidding. Oof. What a politically correct time we're living in. We're scared to say the stuff. Do you feel that? Yeah, I feel it too. Anyway, what I want to share with you today is something very special that happened a little over 50 years ago. The moon landing was July 20th, 1969. Building up to that, the Apollo project, that was Apollo 11, the Apollo project by NASA was in full swing. It had followed a challenge that President Kennedy had given, that we would put a man on the moon and bring him back safely to Earth by the end of the decade. And here it was, 1968, when Apollo 8, this was the first craft that was going to leave the influences, the gravitational influence of the Earth. And it was going to be projected into an orbit around another celestial body, namely the moon. This is the first time human beings were going to go outside of the Earth's orbit, and they were going to orbit the moon. Apollo 8 goes in a nearly perfect launch and orbit of the Earth three times, and then in a trajectory is shot off to the moon to orbit there 10 times. And it happens to be Christmas Eve, 1968, when this happens. And that night, while we were sitting around, the crew from Apollo 8 gave us a Christmas message. And that's what I'm going to play for you right now. And it may lose something because I think the visual has something to do with it too. I will put a link on today's show notes to the YouTube of it. But I want you to close your eyes. Of course, unless you're driving, do not do this, okay? But I want you to close your eyes for a moment and just imagine this is the first time human beings are looking at the Earth from outside. This is the first time that human life has left the Earth's atmosphere and the Earth's gravitational pull and is looking at Earth from the moon. And these are the words that Apollo 8 astronauts read off to, at that time, was the largest listenership, viewership in history. To a planet, to a people that were waiting to hear what the first people that were outside of the Earth, looking back at Earth, seeing the image of Earth rising, what would they say to us? And here is their message.
Earth is now approaching lunar sunrise, and for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness.
And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. Let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. and the evening and the morning was the second day. God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
There you have it. Apollo 8 astronauts. Their message to Earth, to all of us. 1968. First time a human being had been outside of the gravitational force of the Earth. Looking from space out at Earth. And these were the words that they spoke. The words are plain and simple. The expression is profound. It's expressive of the human heart, of what we feel when you realize that there's something bigger than yourself. It's what they sent to us, to all of humanity, to all of humankind living on this little planet called Earth. In the beginning, God created. There it is. Let there be light.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Well, thank you, Susie, for your announcement, and thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you all for all your kind thoughts, prayers. They go a long way in continuing this ministry. Let's see, a few things coming up. We're going to be out in Armenia next week, out at Sasnashen. Do join us for a special podcast next few weeks. We're going to be highlighting the work that In His Shoes is doing in Sasnashen, and it's a small town outside of Tallinn. There'll probably be some review stuff about it too as well next week. On the local front, we'll be at the Holy Apostles Church this Sunday for the Holy Divine Liturgy up in Tahunga. And just you'll find us outside of reality in the virtual world at all of the socials. Just dig us up, In His Shoes, our names, whatever works for you. And of course, at the mothership, inhisshoes.org. I want to thank you for joining us today. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. A little bit different. We connected dots between ourselves, our faith, and an event that took place 50 years ago, a small step for man and a giant leap for mankind, as Neil Armstrong so eloquently stated on that first step made on the moon. Listen, on behalf of the wonderful people who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical engineer, this is Father Vazquez inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
You're seeing the same sky as we are.